Good morning. I am from Cornell University, and I'm working with Harold Van Ness, who's my advisor, sitting here. But this project actually is it's on biochar, and I'm primarily working with Johannes Lehmann, which many of you probably know he's involved in biochar, in collaboration with the University of Nairobi. The project is funded through the Gates Reinvent the Toilet Challenge in that little blue icon, and so we're working, our Kenyan partners, in addition to the University of Nairobi, is a project called Sanergy, and they are a latrine project in Nairobi. And my research, my personal funding, is coming from the National Science Foundation, from the IGERT, the Food Systems and Poverty Reduction Program. So here I'm here to present my research on soil fertility benefits of human waste, biochar, and urine in Western Kenya. Just give a brief introduction, my objectives, some of my methodologies and results, and then continue on to my conclusions. So the rationale of this project is to ameliorate two dilemmas. This is sort of what our food system looks like. We apply a lot of chemical nutrients, grow food, go to the bathroom, and those waste nutrients are discharged into the environment. But in developing countries, you're seeing a lot of degradation of soil fertility and a dearth in input. So this is sort of not happening. You're not having a lot of chemical inputs going into the system, as well as in where I'm working in Nairobi, the people don't have access to latrines in a lot of places, so you have poor health and sanitation, and people are just, you know, discharging their, just going to the bathroom in open areas, and so it's creating a lot of environmental pollution. So I'm trying to ameliorate these two dilemmas and create a system where we're returning our waste nutrients to the environment to sustain soil fertility. And so in Western Kenya, I'm going to address the rural dilemma. You have a problem with low soil organic carbon in areas where maize is being produced. This is a map of Kenya, and the little box is over by Lake Victoria and near a city called Kisumu, where I was doing some surveys, and I just took data from 31 farms, and the average carbon level was about 1.6%. But research that was published by Chris Barrett at Cornell showed that there's a correlation in the soil carbon content and maize yield. So if you can see here on the x-axis, you sort of have very low maize yields at about 0.75 tons per hectare, below 3% carbon. So if we only have 1.5% carbon, we're at very low yields, and that's what's another problem in Western Kenya is acidified soils that is sort of exacerbated by urea and DAP applications. This is also a map of Kenya, and that the blue areas are areas where there's acidification problems, but they're also areas of major maize production. And in general, in Western Kenya, from my experience and in the literature, people are not applying a lot of fertilizer inputs or lime. And then the second dilemma is what I would call the urban dilemma, where you have excess nutrients. This is a picture from the slum of Kibera. It's estimated about 200,000 people from the 2009 census. And human feces and urine is very rich in plant essential nutrients like nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So I just did a little calculation, sort of a back of the envelope calculation, that if we took all the waste from Kibera over a year, we would get enough wasted nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium to supply, based on these calculations, to supply about 3,700 farms with 90 kilograms of nitrogen, about 2,200 farms with 30 kilograms of phosphorus. And these are the present recommendations put forth by the Ministry of Agriculture in Kenya. I realize they're different than what the gentleman before had presented, but this is just what the Ministry of Agriculture is putting out on their website. So the technology that we're interested in, there are many ways to try to recycle human waste, and we're interested in pyrolysis. There's people have also done a lot of projects on compostation. Pyrolysis, though, you can be sure that you're fully sanitizing waste because the temperatures range from 250 to 600 or 800 degrees. It's a faster process time. It can take about between a half an hour to 2 hours versus compostation, which could take many years. You get a dry product, and it's cheaper transport, and it can be stored for long periods of time. And the toilets that we're collecting the waste from, they're urine diversion toilets. So the urine is separate from the solid waste, and so the product is drier to begin with, but it has less nitrogen. My research objectives thus far, I have not finished my project, were first of all to assess the agronomic benefits of human solid waste biochar alongside traditional soil amendments such as urea, lime, and compost through laboratory tests and greenhouse experiments, but I'm not presenting that data here. And then to combine urine nutrients with human solid waste to create a higher value fertilizer product, because people are really interested in nitrogen inputs, not just carbon. So for this project, human waste was collected out of these latrines, dried, we pyrolyzed it in a muffle furnace at different temperatures. I'm primarily interested in the 500 degree biochar. And so I'm gonna just present what I did to assess the agronomic benefits of human solid waste biochar alongside traditional soil amendments. So we did a lot of lab characterizations for the biological, physical, and chemical characteristics. I'm going to present some results. This is just the fecal pathogen results from a pathogen lab in Nairobi called Lancet. And it is just to show that both the composted human waste and the biochars, biochar made at 500 degrees, which is what I'm most interested in, have no pathogens at all. So actually, you know, the compost as well as the human waste were pathogen-free. The surface, so I worked at Cornell. Before I went to Kenya, I was also working with a model system comprised of dog manure and synthetic urine. So I have some results here comparing the human solid waste shown in blue to the dog manure that I was working with at Cornell, and maize stover, which is a more traditional, like, woody biochar that people are interested in. And the surface area of the human solid waste, generally it increases with temperature, but it's actually much higher at the higher temperatures for human solid waste. The human solid waste is mixed with sawdust at a ratio of 1:1 from the latrines. And so I thought that was very interesting that there's a very high surface area of this material. But this is just, these are scanning electron microscope pictures of two different biochars, one made from dog manure, which was our proxy for human waste before we started working in Kenya, and one made from Hollywood. So generally, we actually anticipated that the human solid waste biochar would be very similar to the dog manure and that it would have sort of no structure and very amorphous and low surface areas. As you can see, the wood, it has it's more structured and has more adsorption surface areas. But actually, the human solid waste, probably because of the sawdust, had a very high surface area. And here I'm just showing the cation exchange capacity and the surface charge density, which is the cation exchange capacity, the ratio, the cation exchange capacity of per surface area. So here we can see the human solid waste in blue and the dog manure have, the cation exchange capacity generally decreases with temperature, and for the manure biochars, the human solid waste and dog manure, it's lower than for maize stover. And here I'm going to show, these are sort of the a summation of the laboratory results for what I would consider the most important agronomic factors of this product, the carbon, the liming potential, the total nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And because the biochar generally, I'm comparing here human solid waste biochar to human solid waste compost. And lime, composted cow manure, and composted chicken manure, and these are all lime and the chicken manure and the cow manure are more traditional types of amendments. And the human solid waste biochar, I think that actually if I compare it, if I just look at the nitrogen, phosphorus, and the potassium, it actually has a very high nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium content compared to the human manure and the composted cow manure. It's about 3.6% nitrogen, 2.6% phosphorus and 3.5% potassium. That's much higher than the composted human waste, and I think that's really interesting. But these are results from laboratory experiments, so it doesn't mean that it's plant extractable. We still have to do further work on that. And then the calcium carbonate equivalency, which is sort of a proxy for the liming potential. Although the human waste biochar has a pH of about 10 in water, it has a much lower liming potential compared to agricultural lime. Another thing, factor of interest is how is the persistence of the biochar, the persistence of the carbon in the biochar, which will also determine how available some of these nutrients are over time. So the metric that has been sort of decided upon by the International Biochar Initiative for determining the persistence of carbon that has the best correlation is the molecular ratio of hydrogen to organic carbon. And so here I'm actually using hydrogen to total carbon, but we're assuming that at the higher temperatures it's very similar. So my biochar, the biochar that I'm most interested in at 500 degrees, it has a hydrogen to total carbon molecular ratio of about 0.5, which correlates to this model that was developed through a series of incubation experiments to about, so it would mean, sorry, so this model on the y-axis is correlating the amount of biochar that will remain after 100 years to the hydrogen and organic carbon molecular ratio. And so if, you know, based, like the 500 degree biochar would have a hydrogen to total carbon molecular ratio of about 0.5, which would correlate to about 65 to 90% of the material persisting after 100 years. So that brings into question whether some of these nutrients will be available in a relevant time scale. And so my second objective was to try to increase the fertilizer potential of the product by absorbing nutrients from urine onto the biochar, because nitrogen, urine is very high in nitrogen. And so we did a series of absorption experiments where I basically immersed the biochar in a urine that was acidified and non-acidified, and then water as a control. And the reason I looked at acidification and non-acidification is because nitrogen in urine is in the form of urea that will hydrolyze into ammonium, and that can be volatilized above a pH of like 7, 8. Actually, I'm concerned more about the more alkaline pHs. And urine that's excreted is kind of at a pH of between 8 and 9. I mean, I measured like 9.5, but that might have been because from the time I collected it to the time I measured it, there had already been a lot of hydrolysis and precipitation happening. So I acidified the urine to see if I could get more absorption. And these are my results. It's a little complicated, but let me just explain. So here I'm showing sort of where the nitrogen went. So I have these three bottles of acidified urine, not acidified urine, and water. I put the biochar in them, and I shook it for 24 hours, and I filtered it out. And then I measured the nitrogen concentration of the urine before and after I immersed the biochar. And then I sent the biochar to a CN analyzer to see how much total nitrogen was on the biochar. And I tested before and after. And so so the yellow, I'm most interested in the yellow, is the amount of nitrogen that left the urine and went onto the biochar. And it was about 114.3 milligrams of nitrogen left the solution and was on the biochar, and that was about a 1% increase in the total nitrogen content of the biochar before and after the immersion, and it was much higher for the acidified urine versus the non-acidified urine, but still it was only a 1% increase in the total nitrogen content on the biochar, which would only equal about, you know, 10 kilograms per ton of biochar, of nitrogen, 10 kilograms of nitrogen on a ton of biochar, which isn't that much. But I did see that, you know, you would need also to acidify the urine to get even that absorption, which may not be technologically feasible. So my conclusions are that pyrolysis produces a product that has greater persistence, as predicted by the hydrogen carbon values, than that, and greater potassium and phosphorus availability and liming potential than the human waste compost. Those are two like alternative products that can be developed from this latrine project. But that the high persistence of human waste biochar may limit the nitrogen release, and that urine absorption, that my experiments with urine absorption did not sufficiently enhance the nitrogen fertilization potential of the biochar. But that, I mean, it, really the pyrolysis, it addresses sanitation and waste disposal concerns, but the agronomic values, the agronomic potential really, I think, depends on the ability to combine the urine with the biochar to increase the nitrogen content of the biochar. And I just want to thank definitely my advisors and people that I worked with at Cornell that really helped me in this project, two graduate students, David and Dory, that were also working in Kenya, my technician in the University of Nairobi, Lillian, and people at the Climate Foundation that were funding the project, and people that worked at Synergy, Edwin, I don't know his last name, but he made all the biochar and helped me make the biochar. Thank you.